Hello, I'm Velma Candyass. This is number 0119, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0119. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Jackie Hogan, who is a sociologist and the author of Lincoln, Inc., a book that takes a look at why President Abraham Lincoln is still such a popular cultural figure.
He is a very significant symbol of the nation. And I think one of the reasons for that is that his life story accords with how Americans sort of see ourselves. He, you know, rose sort of from rags to riches. He was a, you know, plain-spoken, down-home sort of politician, and he rose to the highest office in the land. And this really exemplifies the American dream, which is something that has been very, very important throughout America's history.
Actress Eileen Gruba has reoccurring characters on two hit series, HBO's Hung and FX's Sons of Anarchy. Which one does she like better?
That's a tough one. I like both of them. And actually, they're kind of similar characters. They are. They're both very strong, scrappin' tough women.
Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. And this time, Book Banter goes to the dogs with a review of Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend, along with a couple of favorite animal-related books. So don't get caught in the doghouse. It's coming up soon on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0119, was Velma Candyass, who is a Montreal burlesque dancer whose act you can catch every third Friday of the month at Café Cléopâtre here in Montreal. Her show features vaudeville, variety, and burlesque, and you can check out her website at candyassclub.com. That's candyassclub.com. And I thank you very much, Velma, for taking the time to do the opening slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? It's not easy texting in Pakistan these days. Pakistan's telecommunications authority has banned more than 1,600 words for being offensive from being used in text messages effective immediately. Now, the blacklist contains 1,109 English and 586 Urdu words, and there are some surprises in there. Condom, intercourse, flatulence, and breasts have been given the boot, along with Jesus, Satan, quickie, fairy, and drunk. But some of the really bizarre ones are athlete's foot, glazed donut, and for some reason, monkey crotch. Glazed donut? Really? Okay. In Logan, Utah, Elise Bradley was tired of being ignored by her video game-obsessed husband. She put him up for sale on Craigslist. Elise insists it was all just a joke and says, "I didn't see much of him at all, so one day I told him, I'm going to post you on Craigslist, you know? My mother-in-law said, do it." Her husband is 22-year-old Kyle Bradley, a war veteran who served in Afghanistan. But apparently Kyle was so engrossed in the video game Modern Warfare that he spent most of his day playing it. The ad describes Carl Bradley as easy to maintain, just feed and water every 3 to 5 hours. It also warns purchasers they'll need internet service and space for gaming. She even offered to trade her husband of 2 years for an acceptable replacement. Elise said she didn't really expect any responses, but surprisingly got many, including one person who offered a blue bag of Skittles. Kyle Bradley, who said he successfully finished the game within a few days, seems amused by his wife's ad and notes that she encouraged his purchase of the game. He said, "I love my wife. She supported me when I got the game. We stayed until midnight to get the game when it first came out. It's just funny." Yes, that's how the story begins, but really, where will it all end? There are a lot of creepy, unhappy endings on Craigslist. Many of them end up on the Stuff File program over the years, as you know. Anyway, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Retailer, be careful with that Groupon thing. It may come back to bite you. In Reading in the UK, Rachel Brown, who owns Brown's Need a Cake Bakery, gravely underestimated the popularity of Groupon when she offered a dozen cupcakes for $10 each, a 75% discount from the regular $40 price. Now, unfortunately, her small staff of eight couldn't handle the 8,500 orders that came flying in, so she had to bring in temporary workers through an employment agency to fill out the order of 106,800 cupcakes. That cost her $19,500, which wiped out her profits for the year, and she lost around $4 per dozen cupcakes. Brown said, "Without a doubt, it was my worst ever business decision. We had thousands of orders pouring in that really we hadn't expected to have. A much larger company would have difficulty coping." Wait a minute. I thought those Groupon things had a limit, you know, like the first 100 customers or something like that. Why didn't you think of that, Ms. Baker? Huh? Why not? Anyway. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our first guest on the program. In Ridgeland, Mississippi, police say 19-year-old Denario Reed ran his car into a ditch on Lake Harbor Drive. When a Good Samaritan stopped and got out of his white Chevy Trailblazer to offer help, Reed allegedly responded by stealing the SUV and took off toward US 51. As he tore through the Pear Orchard subdivision, he reportedly caused several small accidents, including one with minor injuries. He ultimately slammed into the back of another vehicle and then allegedly tried to pull a woman out of a car she was occupying with her elderly parents. When this failed, he took off on foot. He then attempted to pull another elderly man out of his car, but police were able to surround him, at which time a scuffle ensued. And the best part is he did all of that with a pacifier in his mouth. Now, Reed is now charged with one count of motor vehicle theft, two counts of armed carjacking, leaving the scene of an accident with minor injuries, resisting arrest, simple assault on a female victim, simple assault on a police officer, and false identification. Police did recover the pacifier, and for some reason, it has been sent to the crime lab for analysis. See what happens when some parents let kids have their binky a little too long? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. A century and a half after his assassination, Abraham Lincoln is still hot stuff. The 16th president of the United States is the subject of books, movies, and TV. He appears in advertisements. People quote him. Most revere him. But why? On the line with us right now is sociologist Jackie Hogan. She is the author of Lincoln, Inc. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the show. So what is it with the fascination of Abraham Lincoln?
Well, that is the million-dollar question. Why is it 150 years after his death, we can still see him in the world all around us? So politicians use him, advertisers use him. Here in Illinois in the fall, they make corn mazes shaped like Lincoln, where they advertise, you know, for $5, you can literally get inside Lincoln's head. So this is a question that when I moved to Illinois 10 years ago, I started to wonder about. And that's what the book is about how we use him and how we, in some people would say, how we abuse him for kind of financial gain, political gain, ideological gain as well.
Well, it's not unusual for a U.S. president or any major politician to be highly regarded and adopted by the area that he represented, in this case, Illinois. But Lincoln's lore travels the entire country.
That's right. That's right. You know, I spent a lot of time, two or three years researching this book and spent most of my time in what I call the Lincoln Heartland. So that's Illinois, Indiana, and Kentucky. He was born in Kentucky, lived as a boy in Indiana, and then settled in Illinois. And certainly in those three states, He is a big, you know, tourist draw. You can, you know, visit all kinds of sites that are associated even in tangential ways with Lincoln. But as you say, at the national level, he is a very significant symbol of the nation. And I think one of the reasons for that is that his life story accords with how Americans sort of see ourselves. So he, you know, rose sort of from rags to riches. He was a, you know, plain-spoken, down-home sort of politician, and he rose to the highest office in the land. And this really exemplifies the American dream, which is something that has been very, very important throughout America's history.
Is he actually gaining in popularity? And the reason I ask that question is, here you have a president who is very popular from the state of Illinois. He is regarded as a person who basically freed the slaves. Nowadays, the United States has a black president, their first black president, who represents the state of Illinois.
Yes, I think in some ways he is growing in popularity. Certainly, if you track the number of publications and references to Lincoln since his death, we've seen a huge upswing since about the mid-2000s, so about 2005 or so. Part of that can be explained by the bicentennial of his birth, which was celebrated. The official period was 2008 to 2010 in February. So that accounted for some of that upswing, but then the popularity and the rise of Barack Obama as a candidate and now as president also really, I think, brought Lincoln to the forefront of national conversations, because Barack Obama and his campaign managers made pretty, you know, explicit parallels between Lincoln and Obama. So, you know, Obama would use a Lincoln quote in a speech, and then a Republican candidate would kind of try to keep up by using another Lincoln quote. Sarah Palin was attempting to use some Lincoln quotes along the way. So I think, you know, it has really brought Lincoln back into the spotlight recently.
Are there still, though, some detractors? And again, the reason I ask that question is, obviously, Lincoln was assassinated. His term was cut short. President Kennedy has some detractors for that very same reason. They say, well, he wasn't a good president. He was just somebody who, unfortunately, was cut down in the prime of his life, and that's one of the reasons he's revered. Does Lincoln have any of that in his history?
Lincoln detractors is an interesting topic. Certainly during Lincoln's lifetime, there were lots of Lincoln detractors. He was a very unpopular president. I mean, his people in his own party didn't like him. Certainly Southerners didn't like him. Northern abolitionists thought that he was not moving swiftly enough to emancipate the slaves. They saw him as, you know, Lincoln was a longtime supporter of colonization, that is, basically shipping African Americans out of the country and settling them in regions of the Caribbean or Africa. So he got a lot of criticism from all quarters when he was in office. Now, once he was assassinated, that changed very rapidly. The Civil War had just ended, and no one wanted to be associated with the assassin. So no one was really speaking out. Very few people were detracting him right after his death. In fact, some judges were sentencing anyone who was critical of Lincoln. They would sentence them to time in jail for speaking ill of the president. But since then, you know, in the last 150 years or so, there have been some Lincoln detractors, mainly in the South, from people who now see the Civil War as a war of Northern aggression. And there have been some authors who have written kind of anti-Lincoln tracts, but they are very, very much in the minority.
Is he the most popular president? And I'm thinking that, you know, there's the father of your country, George Washington. Even though you hear a lot about him, Lincoln still seems to get the bulk of the press attention or media attention, as it were.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. I would say in terms of popular culture and kind of representations of Lincoln in popular culture, From my research, I'd say hands down, he is the most visible of the dead presidents. But if you look at surveys over time given to the American public, you see there's kind of a close run between Lincoln and FDR among white Americans. And then also there are some differences with surveys of African Americans that would put Kennedy higher on the popularity or the greatest American president stakes, I guess you'd say. But I think in terms of his visibility in popular culture, I don't think anyone rivals Abraham Lincoln.
Is part of the reason the fact that there are so many people willing to use Lincoln in advertisements, that it gets his name out there more than anyone else? I mean, in other words, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Was it the popularity of Lincoln that drove advertisers to using him, or advertisers using him that drives the popularity of Lincoln?
I think the simple answer is yes, both of those things kind of simultaneously. You know, Lincoln today is such a recognizable brand, you know, almost as recognizable as the Golden Arches. Lincoln's top hat and beard are almost as recognizable as, you know, Mickey Mouse or the Golden Arches. So, you know, when we see Lincoln or we see Lincoln's top hat, it has instant associations for us in America. He has become a brand that symbolizes honor, respectability, moral authority, honesty, and so advertisers and people like politicians can use that Lincoln brand very effectively to very quickly get impress the notion upon the audience that this is a message that is moral, honorable, honest, and so on.
And he was a man of large stature. He was larger than life. He was very, very tall. And having something like, for instance, the Lincoln Memorial doesn't hurt, another very big tribute to the 16th President of the United States. I mean, you know, the Washington Monument looks nothing like him.
Yes, you know, the Lincoln Memorial is very interesting. It's really kind of a sacred site. I mean, it was designed to look like a Greek temple, a temple of the gods. So it has these Doric columns made out of white marble. You have to ascend a steep staircase, which was the way of approaching the ancient gods, was, you know, climbing up a staircase and kind of humbling yourself at the feet of the gods. And of course, you climb up the staircase and you stand in front of this huge and beautiful white marble statue of Lincoln. He's looking down on you. And I think this is one of the sites in the United States that really sacralizes Lincoln, makes him into kind of a sacred patron saint of the nation. It's kind of ironic that at the same time we kind of deify him, we also are financially and ideologically, politically exploiting him. And there's no one else quite like that.
Do you think his lore will grow as time continues, or is there the possibility that another one of the presidents will eclipse him, or is he just so far ahead of the gang?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, if we look again over time, we look at some surveys, we look at the number of Lincoln publications in 150 years since his death, what we see, and I covered in the book, is roughly every 30 years we get a strong Lincoln cycle. So he kind of ascends in popularity for about 30 years, and then he kind of declines in popularity for 30 years, and then up again, and then down again. And that really has not changed much in the last 150 years, even with presidents like FDR or like Kennedy, who, of course, you know, his life was tragically cut short as well. So, you know, even in the face of those, you know, great American presidents, presidents who are perceived as great leaders, Lincoln's popularity has not declined overall.
The book is called Lincoln, Inc., Selling the 16th President in Contemporary America. It's written by Jackie Hogan. And Jackie, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
And thank you.
Jackie Hogan, author of Lincoln, Inc. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0119, and you'll find links to Jackie's website and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
In the air on China Airlines, on the air on stations in Singapore, New Zealand, and America, and streaming through your computer. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll speak to actress Eileen Gruba. Plus, there's another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. And, of course, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff to go. And an idiot of the day. But before we get to more stuff right here, right now, just a quick note. I mentioned on last week's program that I'm starting to take some of the celebrity interviews we do on this show and turn them into a sort of video slideshow that we can put up on YouTube. Now, I've already mentioned previously that we did two from very recent shows. Michael Learned, who was the multi-Emmy award-winning actress who played the matriarch on the Waltons for many, many years. We did that one and turned it into a video slideshow on YouTube. That was a show that was from just about 2 weeks ago. Also, George Chakiris, who was in a show just from a couple of weeks ago. He is an Oscar winner, of course, who played the role of Bernardo in that classic musical West Side Story, which is, believe it or not, 50 years old. So that one's also up on YouTube. And just this week, I went a little further back in the archives, not that far back to August, when we spoke to Julie Newmar, the original Catwoman from the television series Batman. And I've taken that one and turned that into a video slideshow that you can see up on YouTube as well. You can go to the Stuff File page for this show, which is show number 0119, and you'll find the links, which will take you to my YouTube page, and you'll find the links to that particular Julie Newmar interview. If you enjoyed it, share it with all your friends. Leave some comments on the site if you so are inclined, and I thank you very much. Now, on to the Stuff File news. China may be the first country to set up a movie theater specifically for blind people. Movies from Hollywood blockbusters to Chinese films are now being shown for visually handicapped people in a community center in Nantong City. Volunteer narrators provide a running commentary of the action going on in each scene to help them understand what's going on beyond just hearing the dialogue. Excuse me, but having someone provide a running commentary, just how is that different from the annoying aspect of going to a regular theater these days? I'm just asking. Moving right along, police in Cobb, Georgia arrested Alexandra Brooks, age not given, after she allegedly shoplifted several items at a drugstore. The items included cotton balls, two tubes of personal lube, 26 boxes of condoms, and just in case, an ovulation test kit, and a box of baby wipes. Total value, $562.62. The previous month, Brooks was arrested for allegedly shoplifting 9 bottles of oil of Olay. Well, her age wasn't given, so apparently the oil of Olay worked. Still, I'm trying to understand the motive for her shoplifting items. And enterprising reporters get stories by earning the trust of their sources, as I'm sure you know, which Simon Iroro of the Post Courier in Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea, obviously did just that. At a banquet in November, the News Limited, which is part of Rupert Murdoch's empire, albeit crumbling empire, they awarded Iroro its Scoop of the Year honor for reporting on militant tribal fighters of the Free West Papua movement, a scoop he had to earn by agreeing to undergo a ritual circumcision with bamboo sticks to prove his sincerity. Some of the rebels still wear penis gourds whose size varies with the status of the wearer. Now, as a reporter, I personally have my limits to getting a scoop. This story far exceeds them. By miles. There aren't enough miles on this planet to tell you how far they exceed my limits. Moving right along, management consultant Graham Gibbons, age 42, is on trial in Cardiff, Wales, charged with making a clandestine video of himself and his then-girlfriend in bed. Gibbons denied being a pervert, insisting that he made the video to analyze for efficiency the time and motion of his performance, as he might do for corporate clients. Despite his alleged improved lovemaking, the girlfriend broke up with him anyway. But let's give him creative points for that excuse, shall we? Style points, as it were. Okay, you'd think a former police officer would know better. In Mount Gilead, Ohio, former officer Joseph Hughes is facing 21 different charges, including stealing 12 air conditioning units, a 6,000-watt generator, and a welder. And get this, all are believed to have been taken from the Moreau County Sheriff's Office. All of the stolen items were found in Hughes' basement, after which he proceeded to give the most asinine defense of the year, claiming he had no idea the items were down there and that a ghost must have taken them. No kidding. Hughes said in court, "It's going to sound kind of ridiculous, but we believe that there was some kind of paranormal presence in the basement. It sounds kind of ridiculous, but there was evidence to support it." Tom Elkin of the Moreau County Prosecutor's Office said Hughes' defense was probably as odd as I've ever heard. I've been practicing since 1983, and I can say that's the first time I've heard of paranormal activity in the course of a trial. You'll be happy to know, by the way, the jury was unimpressed and Hughes was found guilty. Okay, this is one guy who doesn't get style points for creativity, and also came dangerously close to being the idiot of the day for this week's show, but he's not. That comes later. In the world of computers, laptops, and smartphones, there's still at least one realm in which penmanship counts: bank robberies. This was illustrated perfectly by what police say was a man's failed attempt to rob a bank in Wheeling, West Virginia. Detectives said a white, scruffy-looking man handed a teller a note demanding money, but the teller couldn't tell what the note said. When she handed the would-be robber his note back, he got frustrated and walked out. The robber didn't get away with any cash, but police are still hoping to track him down with the help of video surveillance tape. See, good penmanship helps. That's all I'm saying. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest with me, Peter Anthony Holder, maybe the guy thought the bank had a roach problem. Police in Rancho Santa Fe, California, are seeking information about a man who robbed a branch of the Pacific Western Bank armed with a loaded pesticide sprayer. Toting a white plastic spritzer of bug spray and decked out in a yellow rain jacket with a dust mask, The man made a pretty convincing exterminator. That is, until he approached the teller and then displayed what appeared to be a semi-automatic handgun and demanded cash. The subject fled with an undisclosed sum of money, and fortunately, no one was injured. Well, at least he didn't yell, "Raid!" Yes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Eileen Gruba is a very busy actress these days. She has recurring characters in not one, but two hit television shows. She plays Missy on HBO's Hung, and she's Precious Ryan on FX's Sons of Anarchy. But she's taking a little time to join us on the line from New York. Hi, Eileen. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. How are you, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. So you're a very, very busy lady these days, as I mentioned in the introduction. And how is it to work in two different shows? I know they're cable shows, so they don't have the long 22-arc seasons that network shows do, but it's still a bit of a grind doing two shows, is it not?
Not so much, because I'm a recurring character, so I'm not there all the time, you know? I'm there when they need me. So it really hasn't been hard at all. I hope it gets more challenging to juggle. It's been a lot of fun, and it's not been that time-consuming, actually.
Now, I know for some people, characters are like children, so I'll ask the question, but which one do you like better?
Which character do I like better on the two shows?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I like both of them, and actually, they're kind of similar characters.
Mm. Now, you...
They are. They're both very strong, scrapping, tough women.
You are working on these two shows right now, but you also have a very strong stage background. As a matter of fact, we went to the Actors Studio, correct?
Yes, I still go to the Actors Studio, and I actually just closed a show that was developed out of the Actors Studio and produced by them as well.
And I understand you're a lifetime member of the Actors Studio?
Yes, I am.
And I also hear that some people consider you the new Geraldine Page. That's pretty heady stuff.
That is pretty heady, yes. They often refer to me as Geraldine at the studio. It's quite a compliment, I have to say, yes. A lot of the people at the studio there that are running things today actually, you know, knew her and were around then.
With your career, and you've been doing this for a while now, of course, and you have, as you mentioned, these two recurring characters on two very popular television shows right now. Are there types of roles that you like to do that you haven't had the chance to do?
Yeah, actually there are. I love that more of the roles are becoming very strong women, but I'd love to see, a lot of times the roles they choose for strong women are very harsh. And I'd love to see, you know, a really powerful, strong woman role that was a little more gentle. Because in the reality, in the real world, in my experience, some of the strongest women I know are also rather feminine and gentle. And their strength shows in challenges and in tough times, not in all times, you know?
Do you think,
I would love to get a role like that.
Do you think that comes with time? And by that I mean with the opportunity of more women having the chance to write the characters?
Yes, I do believe that. I just worked with a handful of very strong young women coming out of NYU. And I just worked on one of their stories, and they are seeing women a lot differently. And I do think it is coming. I do think with more women in command, that will happen, yes. Because they see what it looks like, and as we all know, a really, really strong person isn't always coming in with their fists raised and fighting. A lot of them are very calm and don't need to be fighting because they know that they've got the strength, you know?
Is acting something you've always wanted to do?
I would say I acted in some form all my life. Even as a child, I used to make my own little puppets and do puppet shows. And, of course, in and out of my childhood adventures, I was a cheerleader and always a performer in one way or another. But I didn't know that that's where I was going to end up. No, I didn't.
Now you...
I was an artist, and I went to college for an art scholarship, and And then it came from, it came out of that, you know, that's the next step that came, and it just seemed right. And my life kind of led me in the direction of acting. And then I really, really put my nose to the grindstone and made sure I learned it and did put in the work.
Now, you're one of eight children, correct?
Yes.
Where are you?
Yes, I am.
where are you in the birth order?
I am number five of eight. I have three older brothers, three younger brothers, and an older sister.
Wow. Okay. So I'm guessing a little bit wanting to be an actress is just trying to get yourself heard in that crowd.
Yes. I think I was heard. I had an interesting life, far more interesting, I would say, than my siblings. And so I was always, getting attention was not a necessity of mine, but I think my need to have people understand me probably is what drove me into acting. The sharing of human compassion and stories and the things that we learn through our life adventures, I think in order to be a good storyteller and an actor, you have to have a lot of life experience, and life experience comes out in all those roles and helps you speak to people.
Now, in addition,
and helps you help other people understand characters, you know?
Right. In addition to the acting that you're doing, you also, and this goes back to what I asked before about more women getting involved in the writing aspect of things. You're also writing and producing, and you have some ideas in development for projects that you want to do as well, correct?
Yes. And I have produced a few things already, and I've worked on a lot of big shows in television and casting departments and running casting departments and then producing. And yes, I have a film in post-production right now, and I have another one in pre-production. And I have several screenplays in the works. So I've been very busy. I actually sold the first screenplay that I ever wrote to a company, and that was a few years back, but I have a handful of them in the works that I intend to keep control of and not just sell, but actually produce them and make them happen. Because when you sell them, you never know what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. How does the business side of show business, since you're heavily involved in that as well, how does that, if any way, shape, or form, affect your acting?
It affects it in a lot of ways, because being on the business side and the producing end of it, I really understand time constraints and financial constraints and the need for actors who can step on a set and deliver immediately, very low maintenance delivery. And that is something I've learned, which I always expected, but I really learned it as a producer. You don't have time for actors to have any kind of fits or egos or anything on set. You just don't have time for it. And so you need to, as an actor, I try to be as easy and as fast as possibly be, ready to nail whatever needs to be nailed immediately and not worry about things that a lot of actors worry about, like their lighting and, you know, hair and issues that really we don't have a lot of control over anyway. So I think it does affect my acting in that it makes me very conscious of the pressure that the producers and directors are under.
And coming from the stage and then working in the medium of television and film, which is kind of a hurry-up-and-wait business, there's a lot of downtime when you're doing that. You also did some time on a soap opera, which is totally different in that it's a lot of pages of dialogue in a very short period of time. Your stage presence as someone who went through the Actors Studio must have been very helpful in an experience like that.
Yeah, that's true. I learned most of the things I've learned from the people at the Actors Studio, and they've hit every part of the business they could possibly hit, and I have actually some of the best mentors in the entire industry looking out for me. So everything I've ever worked on, I go to them for guidance and ask for, you know, I'll work out characters with them. But also being on the stage and working at the Actors Studio, we're constantly putting up new plays and new characters, and we're doing it all the time. So I've gotten really good at being able to learn dialogue and build characters for multiple things at once. And many, many times I've put up performances where the day before I didn't know the play, you know, didn't know the lines, and then we'd put something up, a 10-minute piece or more at the studio, and you just have to learn it immediately. So I've gotten really good at that, learning it fast and getting it on its feet and building a character.
Well, again, with these two...
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. With these two roles that you are currently playing, Sons of Anarchy and also in Hung, both shows, as I mentioned, on cable, you've done a lot of network television shows as well. Is it, and a few cable shows, is it a freer existence being on a cable program? Are there better written roles?
Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. Sometimes yes and sometimes no. I've been actually surprised. You know, I get some of the very challenging roles and really challenging ones. And then, like, when I worked on CSI Miami this year, I worked on the premiere episode, and it was a really challenging, very challenging role. And I actually was quite surprised that they let me improv a lot of it. And then brought me back to do some more, and they said there aren't a lot of actresses who could pull off this role, and that they would, because it's not a pretty character. So I was surprised with the freedom they had there to play with a big show like that. And yet the cable shows, HBO, they're great. I mean, we play with those characters a lot. And with Sons of Anarchy, I can't wait to see what comes next. We, you know, we'll see, the more you're around a show, the more you find out how much freedom you have to play. But Hung's been really, like, great. We work out the scenes, and we do stick with their dialogue, but they have multiple times said, you know, say this or say that or throw something in, and if you throw something in and they like it, they keep it, you know?
Well, we look forward to seeing a lot more of your work. People can see you on Sons of Anarchy, which is on FX, and Hung, which is on HBO, and I'm sure they can check out more information on your website, which is EileenGruba.com, correct?
Yes, that's correct, and I try to keep that pretty updated, so that always has what's airing when.
Excellent. I thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us, Eileen.
Thank you. Thank you. Really nice talking with you, Peter. Thank you.
Actress Eileen Gruba. You can see her on both HBO's Hung and on FX's Sons of Anarchy. And as they say, check your local listings. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0119, and you'll find links to Eileen's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. I live in a state that's home to one of the world's largest cereal makers. The company has created some of the best-loved characters in advertising, and many of us have grown up with their famous tiger and toucan. So when I learned that the company had sued a nonprofit group that also uses a toucan in its logo, I was very disappointed. The nonprofit does important historical work in Central America, so using a toucan in its artwork is logical. Whether the group's toucan infringed on the company's trademark is debatable, but I believe legal action should never have been taken. Let's be fair, though. Trademarks are very valuable, and those who own them do need to protect them. Fortunately, in this case, the company eventually dropped its legal action and even made a generous contribution to support the group. Now, I spend a lot of time talking about lawsuit abuse, so when I see someone voluntarily drop a bad lawsuit, that's worth applauding too. It shows that, yes, it can happen. Find out more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here is Stuart Nullman with Book Banter. Hi, Stu.
Yo, Rinty. Oh, hi, Peter.
Yo, Rinty?
Yeah. Don't you remember Rin Tin Tin?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the book I'm reviewing.
Okay.
Yeah. So I figure, I don't know if you ever watched the TV series, but I thought I'd add that in. But you know what, Peter, it's very strange. You know, during Warner Brothers, their first decade of existence throughout most of the 1920s, its top star was a dog. And his name was Rin Tin Tin, a German Shepherd who starred in 23 silent features. And all of them were box office hits that quickly made the Rinty the number one box office star with American moviegoers and turned Warner Brothers from a nascent poverty row Hollywood studio on the brink of bankruptcy to a major movie-making force during the golden age of the film industry.
Okay, now I have to ask this question. Since he was a big star during the silent films,
yeah,
did they put up those panels with a dialogue saying, woof, woof?
Well, good question, but I'm going to explain to you actually why he was a big star during the Silent Era very shortly.
Okay.
But the story of Rin Tin Tin is more than just a dog who starred in its own series of hit movies during the 20s and 30s and later a popular TV series during the mid and late 50s. It's a story of an animal as movie star who led the way for Lassie, Trigger, and Flipper. As well, it's a story of how two humans tried at all costs to keep the legend of Rin Tin Tin alive for years to come and for future generations of dog lovers to appreciate. Now, author Susan Orlean, who recounts the life and legacy of one of Hollywood's first and most famous animal stars in her excellent book, Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend. Now, Rinty's roots go back to September of 1918 when Lee Duncan, an American pilot serving in France during World War I, discovered a group of orphaned German Shepherd puppies in a bombed-out dog kennel in the French town of Fleury. Now, he adopted two of those puppies, named one Rin Tin Tin and the other one Nanette, after the name of a popular pair of French dolls that doubled as good luck charms. Now, Duncan took the dogs back to America and trained them very well, went on the dog show circuit. Now, when a newsreel camera crew caught Rinty's unbelievable acrobatic abilities at a dog show in 1921, Duncan believed the dog had potential as a star of his own series of movies. So Duncan wrote a screenplay and shopped it around all of the studios in Hollywood. Warner Brothers showed interest in 1923, and the rest is history. Now, Orlean puts out two interesting arguments in the book about the popularity of Rin Tin Tin. One is that, now get this, Peter, that the original Rinty was so popular because it was the type of movie personality that was tailored for silent pictures. It wasn't treated as an animal psychic or as a novelty, but as an actual actor who had the uncanny ability to express different reactions and emotions besides its breathtaking physical abilities. And second, Lee Duncan, and subsequently Burt Leonard, who produced the Rin Tin Tin TV series, was so obsessed with the dog that he would go through extraordinary lengths to make sure that there would always be a Rin Tin Tin, even at a personal and their own financial costs. But Rin Tin Tin, The Life and the Legend, is a book that revised the legend of the dog, who at one time was the most famous dog in America, and helped revolutionize an animal that can be just as big a Hollywood star than their human counterparts. And how an unhealthy obsession with trying to continue its fame can end up being just as melodramatic as the pictures Rin Tin Tin starred in that made it Hollywood's first four-legged superstar.
Okay, I have to take issue with two things that you said. First of all, you kind of buried the lead here, because I think the lead is a lot of Americans don't realize Rin Tin Tin was French.
Is there a problem with that?
I think you kind of slid that underneath the door there. A lot of people weren't aware of that. And second, you put Rin Tin Tin in the same classes as Lassie, Trigger, and Flipper. And I'm going to disagree with one of those. Trigger was a sidekick.
Okay.
Lassie and Flipper were stars.
In their own right. Yes, but Trigger did have its own fame in its own right, too. I mean, all right, so he had to have Roy Rogers right on top of him.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think you have a good point there.
Okay, there you go.
Now, if you want to read a little bit more about famous animal books, there's a couple of suggestions I quickly want to recommend. First of all, Seabiscuit by Laura Hillenbrand about the famous racehorse in the 1930s, which was also a great movie. Terrific book. Shows how a racehorse basically helped people forget the Depression. Very legendary. And also Marley and Me by John Grogan, about the reporter who adopted what he thought was the world's worst dog because it was like, dumb as a post, but very lovable kind of dog. And very endearing, too, which also became a movie with Jennifer Aniston.
Excellent, sir. And so if people want to get in contact with you without, you know, you falling into a well or one of the other ways that people call animal acts, how can they go about finding you?
Well, they don't have to leap over walls or anything like that, but they can just go to www.westendtimes.ca and you can, you know, read my stuff there.
Excellent. Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter. Thank you very much, Stu.
You're welcome, Peter. Arf.
Stuart Nolman with Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we still have a couple of Stuff File news stories to get to before we get to our idiot of the day to wrap things up on this week's edition of the Stuff File program. You know, some men will tell you they take a lot of crap from their wives. 33-year-old Jerry Grant of Phoenix means it quite literally, and it will likely save his life. Grant's apparently had problems with his bowels for the past several months due to a condition called Clostridium difficile, an intestinal disease that causes severe diarrhea and can potentially be fatal. So doctors plan to actually do a poop transplant. I'm not making this up. Transplanting his wife's feces into his body. The hope is that this will replace some of the digestive bacteria that his own body lacks. Well, best of luck to you, Mr. and Mrs. Grant. So, in the future, when Mrs. Grant gets angry at her husband and says, "Oh, Jerry, you're full of crap," he can respond, "Yeah, you're crap." Oh, how delightful is that? Moving right along here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Apparently, even in Texas, you can't just go off on a guy because he happens to be in front of your house that just got broken into. In Sugar Land, Texas, 34-year-old Andrea Hall found his house had been burglarized. Now, investigators said he saw a man sitting in a car that he thought looked suspicious. So Mr. Hall confronted the man, who denied knowing anything about the burglary at all, insisting instead that he had just pulled over to send a quick text message. Police said Hall then chased the man down the street and slammed his car into the man's car. Detectives said they spoke to the man, who suffered no life-threatening injuries in the crash, and his story checked out. Sadly, he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Hall was arrested and charged with aggravated assault. You see, another tragic case of texting behind the wheel. Oh, sure, he was parked, but that's not the point. Okay, one more story before we get to our idiot of the day. Police haven't released his name, but an 18-year-old Arizona man met a 22-year-old Milwaukee woman online and jumped on a bus from Phoenix to meet her. But what he thought was going to be a hot night turned into him being stabbed more than 300 times. That's right, it's not a typo, 300 times, when their sexual relations got out of hand. According to an affidavit accompanying a search warrant, the man was bleeding from the neck, arms, and back when he called police. Police say once he got to the residence, he was bound with duct tape and stabbed numerous times over a two-day period until he managed to get free. Officers followed a blood trail to an apartment where they found blood on the floor and on bedding in the bedroom, as well as bloody duct tape. A 22-year-old woman introduced herself to officers saying, "I think you're here looking for me." She said she'd been having sexual relations with the man and that the cutting was consensual but quickly got out of hand. After she was arrested, the woman told police her roommate, who's possibly involved in satanic or occult activities, had done most of the cutting. When police searched the apartment, they found a book entitled Werewolf's Guide to Life, a necromantic ritual book, as well as a black folder called Intro to Sigilborn Spirits. According to various websites, Sigilborn spirits include female werewolf spirits who engage in sexual acts. Yes, internet dating. No, thank you. Anyway, let's get to our idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
This is one you might find timely for the holiday season. In Norcross, Georgia, a very stupid 17-year-old boy got to spend 10 hours stuck in a chimney after trying to break into a residence. A neighbor finally heard the boy's screams, and when fire crews arrived, he told them he had been stuck there since 3 a.m. the previous night. Firefighters freed him by lowering a rope from the top of the chimney. He has since been charged with burglary and giving false information to a police officer. Now, why would someone try to break into a house this way? Well, either because he's in the festive mood and at 17 still believes in Santa, or, most likely, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0119. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And when you go to the website, you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0119. You can email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.